There is a possibility because of the pattern of UK trade, which is weighted towards services rather than towards goods, where we could be exempted from tariffs that fall on the EU. But I think that such an advantage would be a very temporary one, because what Trump is engaged in is a trade war to bring down China. And he would only be interested in arrangements with the UK that would be part of that process. So the price we would be paying for such exemptions vis-à-vis the United States would likely be restrictions on our trade with, above all, China.
Hello, I'm Brendan Donnelly, the director of the Federal Trust, and I'll be talking to the chair of the Federal Trust, John Stevens, today about the election of soon to be President Trump re-election. Not so much on the American point of view as the implications for the international scene, and particularly for the European Union and the United Kingdom. But perhaps we can start, John, with talking about the impact of Trump's presidency on the domestic political scene in this country. There are people who think that this will be very helpful and very encouraging for the Reform Party. I'm not sure I believe that, but what do you think about it?
I think that is true, unfortunately. I think it's a huge boost for Farage. And if these rumors are true that Mr. Musk is contemplating giving him a very large amount of money to support his campaign, then it'll be even more true. I think reform now represents an absolutely mortal threat to the Conservative Party. And we'll have to see what happens in the forthcoming local elections next year, and above all, in the Scottish and Welsh devolved elections in 2026. But if reform is able to defeat the Conservative Party convincingly in those, or in enough of those, then I think Mrs. Badenoch's continuing leadership will be in question, and then we'll be in a scenario where one could see effectively a takeover by reform of the Conservative Party.
There are a lot of Conservative MPs, I don't know if they're a majority or not, who've expressed very disobliging views about Trump in the past. Do you think that that's going to develop into a major fissure within the Conservative Party?
I think it could do. I mean, obviously, there's tremendous rowing back by everybody who has been critical of Trump in the past for very obvious reasons, now that he is going to be back in the White House. But nevertheless, I think for a reform takeover of the Conservative Party, which is what we're really talking about, that is for many Conservative MPs, but they perhaps not a majority, a step too far. So I think what we're really looking at is the risk of a split in the Conservative Party.
If it did happen in re relatively short order, then that will give the existing MPs, 50 of them or however many they might be, the opportunity to organise themselves as a parliamentary grouping, perhaps set up another separate party in alliance, who knows, with the Liberal Democrats. It will be a very different set of events from what we've been used to in the past, which is that the dissidents, the potential dissidents in the Conservative Party, have always waited until it was too late.
Well, I think that the takeover by reform under the leadership of Farage linked to Trump, whether that is a step that will finally break the Conservative Party. I mean, there's been speculation over a split in the Conservative Party, really over the European issue, for the last 30 years. And one always thought that there would be a moment that where it would be inevitable. I mean, either the prospect of a referendum on Brexit, or the fact of Brexit, or the aftermath of Brexit. But now we're in a situation where the Conservative Party really faces an existential risk. And if that is enough to cause a split, I can't see anything else being so. It would be a final moment. But what that group that didn't accept a reform future, how large it would be and what it would do, I think is a very open question still. What I think is clear is two things. Firstly, an extreme reluctance by the Liberal Democrats to embrace the people who participate in such a split, partly because they are very much a centre-left party and believe that any association with a split inside the Conservative Party would not suit their electoral interests, even though there is, of course, the temptation that it would only take some 25 Conservative MPs to make Ed Davey, the leader of the opposition. But the other point is that I think that the Conservative MPs who would not go with reform also have no desire to go into the Liberal Democrats.
Yeah, so
And although there might be a fragmentation, some would split off and some even go towards the Labour Party. I wouldn't exclude that entirely. But I think the most likely outcome, if there were to be a split, would be that you would have a new parliamentary grouping of anti-reform conservatives. Now, where that would go electorally is that's another debate altogether.
the Labour government, as we know, is set upon resetting its relationship with the European Union. One of the possible flies in this ointment might be if Donald Trump were to impose tariffs on goods coming from the EU and in some way spare the United Kingdom such a fate. How do you see that as panning out? Would it create an insoluble dilemma for Starmer, or is it just so implausible that we don't need to worry about it?
No, I don't think it's implausible. I think there is a possibility because of the pattern of UK trade, which is weighted towards services rather than towards goods, where we could be exempted from tariffs that fall on the EU. But I think that such an advantage would be a very temporary one because what Trump is engaged in is a trade war to bring down China. And he would only be interested in arrangements with the UK that would be part of that process. So the price we would be paying for such exemptions vis-à-vis the United States would likely be restrictions on our trade with, above all, China. But maybe not just China, because the real background to Trump's campaign against China is not just about trade, it's also about currency, it's about the use of the dollar. And the most dramatic threat that Trump has issued was not actually the 60% blanket tariff on Chinese goods, but the 100% threatened tariff on members of the BRICS grouping if they were to take steps away from the dollar trading system. And of course, this puts us in a very awkward position. I mean,
The
it's not
United
so long.
Kingdom, you mean? The United
Yeah,
Kingdom.
it indeed, because not so very long ago, one of the dreams about the future of the City of London was that it would be a center also for the progressive globalization of the renminbi, the Chinese currency, under George Osborne. And if we are participating in a American-led trade war on China, that has very significant implications for our non-EU trade. And then there is the point about what retaliation the EU might impose on the United States. Against the tariffs that Trump has imposed upon them.
There are
And
people who think that the EU is big enough and clever enough and ruthless enough to be able to avoid a trade war with the United States. While China may well be an objective of Trump's, when it comes to it, there will be a settlement between the EU and a Trump administration. What do you think of that?
I don't think that looks very likely in the short run. I think we're going to have a period of trade friction, and I can't see Trump not making good on his threats to impose some tariffs on the EU, and there will be then a retaliatory action. And the problem that will pose to the United Kingdom is if both the US and the EU are trying to prevent us from essentially circumventing their respective tariffs. And that causes all sorts of potential difficulties for our trade and cooperation agreement with the EU. So
And
now it may
particularly
well
with the
be that
wind
in the
in Northern
longer run,
Ireland, and particularly in Northern Ireland, of course.
well, that is a further issue and a very specific problem, which would be created thereby. Certainly, Northern Ireland would certainly be in the front line for that, but not just Northern Ireland. It would be something which would affect the whole spectrum of our trade relation because both the United States and the EU will be wanting to prevent us from essentially circumventing their respective tariff wars. How long this confrontation might continue and whether there could be some arrangement that would emerge ultimately to settle it, I mean, that's very open. But I can't see Trump not making good on the threats that he has made so far. I don't think this is just a negotiating ploy. I think we will expect from the moment he is in the White House, we will expect some tariffs to be imposed.
How do you think Starmer would be able to sell to the Labour Party, siding, as it were, needing objectively, as he saw it, to side with the Americans rather than the EU? Would that create domestic difficulties for him?
Well, certainly Trump's America is extremely unpopular in the Labour Party. And taking a pro-American line is going to be far more difficult for Sir Keir Starmer than it was for Blair supporting G.W. Bush over Iraq, for example. I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, it does remain to be seen how this confrontation unfolds. And we are not in a position to take any sort of lead in this. The UK's position is going to be reactive. We'll have to see what Trump actually does and how the other players, China and the EU, who will be his principal targets, and also, of course, the two neighboring states of the US who have also been targeted directly, Canada and Mexico, and which also has significant implications further on for trade in Latin American things. This is something which is being driven by Trump. The big players in it are the Chinese, principally, who are the target, and the EU, I think, who will also be a target of kind. And where we stand will depend very much on how those bigger players react. It's quite impossible to talk about any form of autonomous, independent UK policy in this. It's going to be entirely reactive.
One of the hopes of Keir Starmer and his colleagues for the reset of relations with the EU was the defence sphere, the security aspect of European policy. How far do you see what Trump is likely to do with regard to NATO and indeed the general positioning of the United States in Europe, would that cut across this reset or might it even facilitate it?
Well, I think at the moment, what is happening over Ukraine and the return of Trump to the White House is helping Sir Keir Starmer's attempt to get closer to the EU in defence matters. The French have just dropped their veto on the proposed European Defence Fund being also available for spending by UK companies and, for that matter, US companies. So there is an attempt by the EU to create space for the UK to come on board in a defence arrangement. And this is particularly focused on what people are anticipating to be the shape of any form of ceasefire that Trump negotiates with Putin for Ukraine. Because the suggestion seems to be at the moment, and obviously this is all highly speculative, that it would be a freeze on the where the forces are now, a ceasefire, not a basic a peace deal, but a ceasefire guaranteed by the presence of European forces in Ukraine, and those forces would, to be credible, would have to include UK forces. And so that, I think, is leverage that the UK has. But behind this is the bigger question of European strategic autonomy, which is, of course, linked to, above all, the nuclear deterrent. And there, the position of the UK is somewhat problematic because of the dependence of our deterrent on the US, that it's not fully independent in the same way the French is. So as regards the likely, what current speculation suggests would be a Trump-imposed deal on Ukraine, the position of the Labour government and the UK's position has been strengthened in recent weeks. But the background problem still remains of whether we really belong in a US camp or in a European one.
Can you imagine that the European Union will ease trade frictions with the United States of America by buying more military kit from the United States? After all, it's generally accepted that Europe will want to do more on defense over the coming years. Buying better upgraded weapon systems from the Americans seems an obvious way of doing that, and it might rectify what Trump perceives as trade imbalances.
Well, that is certainly the first choice solution always has been in the past, and there's some evidence that the Dutch and the Germans, for example, are talking more about this. But it doesn't solve the fundamental problem. I think what Trump's return has really brought to the fore is the realization that Europe cannot rely simply on going from one American election to another to have this uncertainty over the future of NATO, and above all, the reliability of the American nuclear umbrella. That is what has really been raised by the Ukraine war, and that needs to be resolved. So, although I could see as part of the negotiations of Trump in the face of Trump-imposed tariffs that there will be promises to spend more on defense or buy more, as was the last time that Trump was threatening tariffs in. On European goods, the agreement to buy more agricultural products and things. I mean, there are a range of things to lower the deficit, but the basic strategic issue that has been raised by Ukraine will not go away. And that requires a European decision about whether it is capable of being sovereign in defence, and that means the nuclear deterrent.
I mentioned we've been talking about the difficulties that that Keir Starmer might have within his own party in aligning himself more with the US view of things than the European view of things. But another area in which that difficulty would be particularly challenging, it seems to me, is the question of environmental issues, the net zero targets, which the Labour Party are ideologically much committed to, and the EU is also very much ideologically committed to. The US, on the other hand, seems to have both financial and ideological reasons why it views these policies with considerable skepticism. Do you think that will be another point of friction between the Labour Party and a Trump-led administration?
Well, it certainly is a point of friction, and it's a complicated issue because the focus is all on the dimension of climate change and the arguments surrounding climate change. But there is, of course, beneath that, a much more hard-nosed economic issue, which is that the advance of technologies in renewables has actually opened up the possibility of there being a source of very cheap energy. It requires tremendous upfront capital expenditure, particularly on the grid and things. But green energy, renewables, are now serious economic competitors with fossil fuels. And that is placing a pressure on all suppliers of fossil fuels, which include the United States, to monetize their assets, their reserves, before the demand for their product is replaced by renewables in one form or another. I mean, this is a very delicate period of instability in energy markets, but the goal is very clear, and it's been very clear for anybody who hasn't got fossil fuels. Europe, including the UK, it requires, if it's going to be sovereign in energy supply, if it's going to be self-sufficient, it requires a move to renewables. If you're in the US sitting on enormous reserves of gas and oil, you view this in a very different way. And that is that debate, that competition between two fundamental economic situations is what is really underpinning this debate. And that the UK has no serious option if it wishes to have cheap energy in the future, and energy over which it has sovereignty, has control, self-sufficiency. The only scenario in which that can happen is by a move to renewables, and that's true for the whole of Europe. It's not true at the moment for the United States.
If you had to say, we've talked about a number of cross currents in the relationship, or the impact of Trump on Europe and on the United Kingdom. If you had to say, do you think that Trump's presidency has brought forward the date when the United Kingdom rejoins the European Union, put back the date, or made no difference at all?
I think it has probably brought it forward, but it has also substantially raised the price in terms of the disruption inside the UK over getting to revisiting the issue again, another referendum on EU membership, for example, because the divisions which we've seen over Brexit, which were substantially about economics and about sovereignty, are now being turned into a division between two foreign models for the British economy, a European one and an American one. And that is much more divisive. That is a much more fundamental rift. And it's one that is also very deep in our culture between looking west, looking over to America, the ideas of the Anglosphere, and the recognition that we are a European country like France or Germany or whatever. And it also affects the sort of our ideas of society, our values, our attitudes towards welfare and things. This is a very profound division. So, and that debate, which is beginning, we're seeing it. I mean, in reform and the Conservatives to a lesser degree, but reform, particularly the challenge of reform, is essentially that it is becoming the American Party in British politics. And the question is the Labour Party going to follow the logic of this debate and become the European Party? And such a rift in our politics is going to be very, very disruptive and dangerous. So that whereas one could have imagined a situation in an ideal world where people recognize that Brexit has not been successful and should be reversed, and in a sober way, we analyze why this was a mistake and then try to correct it and have the time to correct it in a disciplined and rational manner. That may not be the case. This is that the nature of our politics is being transformed by the advent of Trump. And that is really what I fear. I think an unstable future.
Well, it may be that there's going to be an unstable future, or was always going to be an unstable future brought about by Brexit. Thank you very much for speculating, and it has to be informed speculation at the moment about the sort of dilemmas and choices that the United Kingdom will face, in particular, and European Union as well. The only thing I would point out is that during the 2016 referendum, the Leave side were very cautious about saying that they wanted to build. Well, not Singapore on Thames, but Washington on Thames. It's not necessarily a prospectus which is very exciting for the great majority of the United Kingdom's electorate, even if there are newspapers and individuals and opinion formers and social media barons who take a different view. Thank you very much indeed. We'll continue this debate as we know more. And thank you to everyone for listening.